Well, it's good to be with you and to share a little bit. We'll have three sessions this morning. I'm going to talk first. We'll talk through the theology of what we do, the theology of compassion. Then I'm going to take you through, we have a whole eight-week series on Poverty 101. You're going to get one of those sessions this morning, and we'll take questions. And then we're going to talk a little bit about where we see in the church the role of compassion and the purpose of it in some practical ways. As I go through it, what I want to open it up to is if you have a question as I'm speaking, I want you to feel free to raise your hand and we can walk through any kind of question you have. Tell you a little bit more about myself. My wife Jane and I have been married 27 years. We met at Wright State University in Dayton, Ohio. And I was headed off to Mount Vernon. I blew my knee out and had to begin to have a series of knee surgeries and was not able to go to Mount Vernon, so I went to Wright State. It was after that year that I thought about, I met my wife, but was still thinking I needed to go to college, to a Christian college, and so I applied and was accepted and headed off to Mid-America. And that summer, before I blew, I destroyed my right hand playing church softball, had to have reconstructive surgery. At that point, I did not want to have any more surgeries, so I chose not to go to another school. But I'm thankful how God has worked in our lives. If my wife was able to be here today, she would tell you that she thought she married a U.S. congressman. My background was in politics, and I went to work. I was a TV news reporter for a short time, and then went to work for a U.S. congressman. And so I've gone from working with criminals wearing suits in D.C. to working with criminals in the inner city. The only difference, one wears suits and one doesn't. But have God took me on a path to give me some unique training and some unique background. And so started a ministry in Dayton, Ohio while I was still involved in politics. And then entered full-time ministry in Cincinnati and served there for a time. And then July will be the 20th anniversary of our family moving to Indianapolis and serving with Shepherd Community. Jeremy, our oldest, is with us, is with me today, and Jeremy is married to Ritu. Ritu, they met, they went to Olivet, but they met interning at Shepherd Community, and she is originally from India, so I enjoy food time in our family. And Jeremy is finishing up his master's through a program we created at Olivet called a Master's in Urban Pastoral Leadership. The hope for the city is the church. And we need leaders. And so Jeremy and one other are the first two graduates. His name is Gabe. He's at Shepherd as well. We'll be the first two graduates this May from that program. I have a daughter, Jane and I have a daughter, Jenna. And Jenna is a senior at Olivet. She's engaged to be married to a guy named Edson Solores. He's the tallest Guatemalan you'll ever see. He's 6'5".
Oh, wow.
Now, you'll see this common story here. They both went to Olivet, but they met interning at Shepherd Community. And so we've told our youngest, Jill, who graduated last year, and she's working part-time at Shepherd and working on a heart issue she has to intern at Shepherd at some point to meet her future spouse. And they so she has South America, Africa, or Australia to choose from. We've got Asia and Central America covered already. So that's a little bit about our family, and it is a call that God placed on our whole family to serve in the city. And so Jenna will be coming back, and she'll be doing we have a fellows program where after you graduate from college, you serve a year with us. She'll be doing that this next year, and her husband Edson is a project manager, IT guy for us in the ministry, and so it is a privilege to serve together as a family in the city. And to my wife grew up in a suburban part of a rural almost part of Dayton, Ohio, which is where I'm from. She grew up in a place called Tip City, and grew up with cows. Are you from Tip City? There's three of you, I think.
Have you ever heard another?
At least admit they're from Tip City. That's about all there is. It's also the home where the president of Olivet, John Bolden, was born and raised. So there's three of you who are from Tip City. And so we end up living in the inner city. And so God has a sense of humor. But I want to talk in this first session about the theology of why we do what we do. We're not in this for the same reason that the world is. There's a much different way. And so I'm going to start with this premise, is that in Genesis it said God created everything and it was good. And then Satan comes in, the deceiver, and he perverts that. And so hell became death. And we could go down the list. And I would contend to you that God created compassion, and Satan perverted that with sympathy. And so what I fear is that the church has grabbed a hold of feeling sorry for people. And that's never the way Jesus operated. So I'm going to take a quick walk through in the book of John. And so if we go to the book of John 4, there's some important foundation we see there. And the first thing it says at the beginning of that, it's Jesus. And he's journeying with the disciples. And the disciples, let's just understand, they're a bunch of knuckleheads. They're flunkies, right? They've not done well. They didn't get picked in the rabbinical school. And so Jesus picks them again and says, follow me. And we're going to see for 3 years, Jesus, I'm sure he's going, okay, Father, are you sure these are the right ones? And so this moment in time, it says Jesus had to go to Samaria. Well, there was no reason for a Jew to go to Samaria. Absolutely not. It was forbidden. And so what would make John write that Jesus had to go? And I would contend to you that the only reason why he had to go is that his Father commanded him. And so at the very beginning of this, I believe that the basis of us as the church serving in compassion is that we have to go to forbidden places. It made no sense. And so we see this interesting journey, and so they're there in the middle of the day, it's hot, so they're in a place they're not supposed to be, and all of a sudden Jesus starts talking to somebody he's not supposed to talk to. And you can imagine the disciples, they're going, Jesus, do you know you're not supposed to talk to her? Jesus, do you know what you're doing? And so he talks to a woman he's not supposed to talk to. The political realities of the day did not shackle Jesus to do what he needed to do. Nor should it be us. Yeah. And so Jesus starts talking to this woman. And I want you, I noticed as I drove here this morning, there's a Starbucks. So you have civilization here. And so try this at Starbucks. Go up to someone and say, I know you're living in sin. And you've been living in sin. You've been married 5 times. And you're the person you're living with now, you're not even married to. Try that and see how a cappuccino feels. But this hilarious thing is that's how Jesus led. Why do you think Jesus would immediately, he just met this woman, so her first thing is she probably thinks he's hitting on her. Be honest, because guys didn't talk to women. If it's not your wife, you don't talk to them, and you sure don't out in public talk to a different woman, and you sure didn't talk to this woman. She was one of those. Everyone knew it. That's why she's there in the middle of the day getting her water. She wanted to stay away from all of the folks who would criticize her and mock her. And so he leads with that. And I want you to know that in the many years that my wife and I have been able to do ministry, do you know how many times we've ministered to folks who felt like they didn't deserve it? Jeremy and I just a couple weeks ago, in the middle of our parking lot, I'm grabbing a kid by his jacket and saying, I'm not going to give up on you. He relapsed with his heroin addiction. And he can take his jacket off to show me his fresh track marks, 10 and a half months clean. And his plan was to go get another hit and probably kill himself. Because he blew it. Yeah. See, I don't amount to anything. And I want you to know that sometimes the most compassionate thing we can do, I probably shouldn't move too much, should I? I'll not move. It's probably better for my knee. So, Jesus knew that she thought, if he really knew me, he wouldn't tell me he loved me. that sin creates such a burden in people's lives that the most compassionate thing we can do is address that sin, because it is the burden and the barrier that keeps folks from realizing that I can truly be loved by a God who created me. But the world has begun to dictate to us is that you don't want to delve with sin. That's not compassionate. And I would contend that that thought pattern is feeling sorry for someone. But in this moment in time, Jesus goes right to the sin and says, yeah, I know you're a sinner, but I love you. And the greatest thing in poverty we have is a spiritual poverty that is burdening the people in our pews and in our neighborhoods and in our cities who think they don't deserve the love of a Heavenly Father, just like Michael did that Tuesday afternoon. He had let us all down. I said, I love you enough that I'm not going to let you do this to me. Jeremy has grown up with him, knows him. He lived across the street from us, embracing him, speaking the love of Christ. Yes, you're an addict. I'm not going to sugarcoat that. And Jesus saying, yeah, I know you're a sinner. And you have had a life of brokenness. But Jesus embraced her in that. And if we want to talk about how do we restore our communities, look at John 4. What's it say? It says, she ran back to the town and said, this guy knows everything about me. And he still loves me. And it says, many came and believed. So at the very beginning of understanding this journey of compassion, it starts with our call to deal with the spiritual brokenness of our neighbors. Another passage that I find really interesting, it's in Mark 5. And so Jesus has done all this with the disciples, and they get on the boat, and they're going across the lake. And this is another one of those, I'd have loved them in there. And so they're like, hey, Jesus, oh, this is so awesome, you're doing great, Jesus. Where are we going? Oh, we're headed right over there to that cemetery. Whoa, Jesus, we're good Jews. We don't go to cemeteries. Oh, no, that's where Jesus. We don't go to cemeteries. We don't go to those places. And you know, there's a really bad guy in there. He's all messed up. He runs around naked. They put chains on him. They can't keep him. Jesus, we can't go. Jesus says, that's where we're headed. And you can imagine the debate that's going on now. They're talking to each other, right? Doesn't he know? And it's really interesting. We hear the wonderful story. Now, the swine industry really isn't hip on this miracle. Yeah. The hog farmers are really mad. But Jesus goes, and what's he do? He releases the demons from this man, and he is healed. But scholars tell us, you know where the disciples were during this whole time? Still in the boat.
Yeah.
Still in the boat. I want you to know that I fear that sometimes in the church we won't want to go to those places. Because it makes no sense. And we don't want to work with those people. And we see this continued journey of Christ where he goes to those places and to those people. And he embraces them in their brokenness and begins to bring healing. In John 5, we see another story, and it's this really difficult part to understand the compassion of Christ because he's all over the board. In one moment, he's confronting a woman at the well with her sin right away, and then in John 5, he goes to this guy who's paralyzed, and he says to him, do you want to get better? Why do you think he asked that? Someone doesn't want to get better. You can't help them. Part of this is a decision on their part. And as much as we want someone to make right decisions and someone to do the right things, we can't force it. And so Jesus immediately begins to discern this issue of the heart. And so he says, do you want to get better? And what's the guy's response?
Help me.
I've got plenty of excuses here. And here's what I fear if it was today with this issue, what the church would do is we would spend all of our energy trying to create a machine to get him in the water. When standing in front of him is the God of all creation. Here is all that he needs is Jesus Christ who will take care of everything for him. And we would probably sometimes get more interested in this idea of getting him into the water. And even in his own brokenness, he's blinded to the fact that Jesus is standing before him. So he starts giving him all the excuses and someone else always beats me. You know what we know about this guy? Jesus heals him, right? So is it about the miracle? No, because he dies. Everyone Jesus healed died.
Yeah.
Lazarus, two-time loser.
Yeah.
So if everyone Jesus healed, and he didn't heal everyone, but those that he chose to heal died, and if Lazarus dies again, what was the purpose of the miracle? What's the purpose of compassion? Give glory to the Father and to make connection to man. Give glory to the Father. Remember, with Lazarus, it says this is so that the Father may be glorified. But in each of these, he's creating a relationship so that he could do the most compassionate thing, which is to share Jesus Christ, to share his own story of redemption for them. And so another important theological premise is, if what we do doesn't do those two things, I don't think we need to be doing it. We're not the Bureau of Motor Vehicles of Compassion. Take a number, stand in line. And so Jesus heals this guy. But he never deals anything spiritual with him, does he? In that moment right there, he just says, pick up your mat and go. Why did he tell him to pick up his mat? Now, your district superintendent's here. Rabbi Palmer. And so Rabbi Palmer, if he was to speak and he would tell us what this area is like. It's a desert, right, Rabbi?
Yeah.
And deserts are hot. He knows that. He's very wise. So he would tell us how bad it is. So this guy, how long has he been sick? 38 years. He's been laying on that mat. There's not enough for breeze. And Jesus says, pick up your mat and take it with you. Things. I've been laying on this. Every morning his family would bring him there. And they'd take him home at night. And they'd say, bring the mat with you? Why? Because sometimes we need to remember from whence we came. I think one of the challenges in the church today is that we forget the miracles that Jesus has done in our own lives. And we become complacent. And so part of the role of compassion is to remind us what it is that God has done in our life. And so he says, take your mat with you. We're good scholars, so we continue in John 5 there. And it says, sometime later, scholars tell us probably a few days, Jesus sought him out and said, stop sinning, or something worse is going to happen. I would contend to you today that every moment that Jesus engaged with people in the miracles was about connection. And in the third session today, we're going to talk about Legos and the fact that we're all Legos created for connection. But as we look at this theology, we begin to see that Jesus has laid out a very important plan for us. And he modeled it for us. We've got to go to broken people. We've got to go to forbidden places. We've got to not acquiesce to the political realities. What are the forbidden people today? What do you think? That's a question for you.
Homosexuals.
AIDS.
Drug addicts.
Those who have no documentation.
Prison.
Mm-hmm. OI.
Sex trade.
Ooh, that's messy. We don't want to talk about that, right? So how is it for us in the church, are we to respond? The answer is not going to be to open your door and invite people in. But it is for us to go. Mm-hmm. If it is merely us to gather, we will never make the difference because we see Jesus consistently going. And the church must be unleashed. And the church is not a structure. And the part of compassion is not a program. It is the natural outpouring of our holiness. Our doctrine of holiness brings hope for today. It is hope for those broken people. Because it says not just, hey, wait till you get to heaven, but we have a wonderful hope for you today, and is that the Holy Spirit can live in you and empower you to live regardless of the circumstances of your life. And that God meant it when he had his son say this prayer, thy kingdom come on earth as it is in heaven. That's not a future, that's a now. It's present. My English teacher would really be proud of me knowing that. Present and future tense. For us in the kingdom, compassion is much different. I have friends who work for the United Way. We're not the United Way. I was talking to a friend in a church. And they have a really nice food pantry. I said, how's it going? He goes, oh, we're serving about 500 families a month. Great. Have you seen any of them incorporate into the church? Oh, no, we don't invite them to church. Okay. Do you pray with them? No, we don't want to offend them. So I said to him, so it's not offensive that it's okay that they die and go to hell? And he said, I think that's a bit harsh. And I said, well, not caring about where they spend eternity is a little harsher.
Yeah.
The purpose of the church isn't to count the numbers of food bags that go out the door. We are not to be measured by outputs, but by outcomes. And the outcome of the church is much different than the world. We cannot acquiesce to the political powers that push us. To want to separate. I'm going to tell you, in the realities of today, in 10 years, everything's going to look a lot different.
Yeah.
It's just this. But I'm really excited when the church changed when Constantine said, we're going to be a Christian nation. And then it was expected everyone was a Christian. Up until then, the church was going full bore, right? And we began to see it falter. I want you to know that the hope doesn't lie in Washington, D.C. It doesn't lie with Democrats. It doesn't lie with Republicans. It lies with Jesus Christ. And his institution to be the hands and feet in the flesh of Jesus Christ is the church. And in that moment on that Tuesday afternoon for Michael, Jesus Christ was represented by Jeremy, by myself, by the police officer who was standing there with me, trying to help Michael understand that God still loved him. And whether it's handing out a bag of groceries, whether it's tutoring a child, whatever it is, the way we do it matters. And our theology is clear. We are the church. It is about his kingdom come on earth as it is in heaven. And so as we follow the pattern of Jesus, it is this rather difficult thing. It's that. I can't give you a bracelet that tells you how to do it.
Yeah.
You know, we can't come up with a great marketing slogan because in the moment it's determined by the Holy Spirit how we proceed. Because in one moment Jesus is in her face saying, yeah, I know your sin, but I still love you. And in the next moment he's healing them to create the relationship. And the third session, you'll hear this in some other terms. If you're not creating relationships, there is no purpose for us to do our confession.